Okay, here we go. I'm Bill Smith. I'm an alcoholic. I'm sober through the grace of God and the fellowship of this program. I always say that. I looked up the word grace. I didn't go to school. My brothers did. Grace means an unmerited gift. And if you had to do something good to get here, you'd have a different speaker. I can tell you that. I want to thank Harlan and Zan for having me again. And for you people that heard me, what it used to be like is going to be about the same, and what happens is going to be about the same. But I tell you, what it's like today is going to be a heck of a lot different. I'll tell you that, boy. And the ones that was in Oregon last month, whenever it was, I was up there, and I was a Saturday night speaker and wound up in the emergency room. Still got problems, and but I'm here. I got some calls from my doctor, and I told him I'd call him when I get back. And I'm not going to quit living. And before I get started, I was up here 9 years ago, and what I've done over the years by doing this, I never set out to be a speaker, and I still don't. I don't try to make demo tapes or nothing. What I do is I ask God to, you know, please don't let me be a phony. Don't let me get away from what the gifts you give me, and just let me be as honest as I possibly can. And what I've done is I've made some lifetime friendships, and it says that in the book. If you come in here and do this thing and get active in Alcoholics Anonymous, you will make friendships that last for a lifetime. And my good friend Lenny and Patty are sitting there, and Butch and Kim, and my good friend Harlan, and I've made, in other parts of the country, I've made some acquaintances, but I got some great friendships, all because of a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're drunk like me, I came in here a party of one trying to commit suicide. So I hope that I can make a difference, maybe, and just in a crowd this big, if I can make a difference in one or two lives, then my job is done. And because a little over 34 years ago, somebody made some difference in my life. And I'd like to tell you, at that conference, I'd like to tell you which speaker did it, and I don't have a clue. I can tell you the speakers, though. I still remember them. There's Johnny Harris and Father Hillary, Tom O'Sullivan, Nancy Stewart, and I don't know which one turned my light on. But one of them turned my light on, and 2 days later, I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't had a drink since October 18th of 1975. And I tell you, not only does that impress my family, but that impresses a lot of people, some cops and all kinds of people that impress me. You know, so I listened to Carlos Munoz. Fantastic. I was raised the way you were supposed to be raised. I never seen my mom and dad take a drink, never heard them cuss. Never seen him smoke a cigarette. I was raised in the Deep South. I never heard the N-word in my home. I got all that stuff from my homies. I didn't get none of that at home. I got three brothers that act like my mom and my dad. One time my mom said, how many kids you got? And he says, I got three sons and him. I didn't know, you know, I hope that was a joke, you know. And I was always sort of bored, but I had a few drinks when I was in my teens, and I didn't. My hair didn't stand up. I hear people say they had a drink in their whole life, and that didn't happen to me. I had a few drinks. I found out I could talk better if I was about 3/4 shot. Went on this bootlegger's house. He had a good-looking little old daughter, and I couldn't talk to her. And after one glass of that white whiskey, I was the smoothest son of a gun in North Carolina. Boy, I'm telling you, I was. And I know that was good stuff, so I had her in that old 40 Plymouth. So whatever was in that thing worked pretty good. And I didn't go out the next day and say, I want some more of that stuff. And what happened was I joined the Navy to see the world and became a drunk. I wish there was more to it than that, but it's not. I joined the Navy, and I crossed that line. And if you're new here, I want to welcome you. And if I can get across one thing about it is what I do is I had a big book study at my home for a long time, and it got so big I stopped it, moved it to another place, and they closed. And now I'm back to taking guys through the book from the doctor's opinion, always with 164 pages, one at a time. And every time I take one through, Billy winds up a little bit more understanding. And when I was going through the more about alcoholism a couple times before, I was going through there, and when it talks about, we're like a man who lost his legs, and I'd read that like 9 million times, and I thought, Jesus, how stupid does Bill think we are, right? Anybody knows if you cut your leg off, you can't grow a new one. I mean, now you can be 4 years old and know that, you know. And it finally dawned on me, right? What he's trying to tell stupid rednecks like me is, once you cross the line and become an alcoholic, you can never go back across the line and be non-alcoholic. You'll never go back and control and enjoy your drinking. You can stop, but you can't stay stopped. And That's my case. I started getting arrested, and I was in the Navy, and you can do a lot of things in the Navy. You just can't miss the boat. And I was in Japan in one of them houses where they had the two things I like, and had too much of both, I guess. Anyway, when I got out there, the boat was gone, you know. And they could have put my stripes on a hinge because they just went on and off, you know. And I'd get promoted, and then they'd take them off, and I'd get drunk, and they'd take them off, and I'd do good, and they'd put them on. And I went in with little white stripes and come out with little white stripes. So, you know, and I'm not going to go into no drunkalogue, but I moved to Florida, and I did what the book said. I straightened out for a little bit. I seemed to be able to control it. I got a good job with General Electric. I wound up losing that, and I wound up on a fishing boat, commercial fishing. I thought I'd found heaven because it was all drunks, and they fired me. And so I was, couldn't get it going. I always knew I was going to get it together, but it didn't seem like Florida was the place to get it together. So this guy kept telling me, why don't you go to Las Vegas? They got 24-hour bars and a lot of showgirls. I said, God, that's a pretty good combination there, buddy. And, so in 1963, I come across that hill and wound up sleeping on the guy's couch. I had one number, and he let me stay there for a couple months, and he couldn't take me no more. And he asked me real nice if I'd just leave. He didn't like my dirty mouth around his two little girls, and he didn't like the way I acted, didn't like the way I drank. And I wound up homeless in Las Vegas with everything I owned in the carnation box, walking up down Fremont Street, and I couldn't look you in the eye. And I used to get mad at people that wouldn't put their cigarettes out because I had shoes with no soles. And I got a job as a shill. That's a guy that starts game. When the games get started, you go to another game. $1 an hour. I got one brother that owns his own company. The other one, he made fake checks this big. And the other one did all the runways and stuff for the government. And I'm making $1 an hour and think I got it going on, you know. And I don't know how. It still bothers me this day. I'm 74 years old. It still bothers me. I got fired from a job, $1 an hour, that nobody wanted. I mean, that's just, you know. I came in one day and the guy said, don't bother to sign in, you don't work here no more. And I said, Ray, Jesus, you fire a guy for missing a day? He said, Billy, today's Friday. When's the last time I was here? He said, Monday. I said, holy mackerel, I've been gone 3 days, I didn't have a clue. But I met her and fell in love for 2 days, you know, and I went over and I said, well, you're a real guy, buy a guy a drink, right, after you fire him. He said, go to the bar. And I looked in the pit, and he was standing there like this, and you could see the smoke coming out of his ears. And he come over and told the bartender, give me a quart of orange juice and a quart of tomato juice. He says, go home and drink that, sober up, and get back in here. I said, Ray, you just fired me. And I looked around, and I knew I was in a bad spot. So I picked both of them up, and I worked for him. And when I came in, he said, what are you going to do with your life? And I said, I don't have a clue, right? He said, let me break you in the gambling business. And that was my first Eskimo. And I broke in the gambling business in 1963. And what happened was I met this cocktail waitress. She had some things I really liked. Wait a minute. Don't. She also had a car and apartment, you know, and a really nice apartment and a nice Thunderbird. And I'd agreed to go into a hospital. I got drunk and got married. You can do that in that town. And I agreed to go to a hospital and dry out. And I used to tell people I was 29, but it don't add up, so I don't tell that no more. I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and I was drunk a lot. And I'm telling you what I remember. If you ask England some other people, they'll give you a different story when I tell you, but I'm just telling you what I remember. And I agreed to go to the hospital, and I remember laying in the hospital, and I remember the guy sitting on the side of my bed telling me that you're not going to live much very longer. I'd be lucky if you live 2 more years, that your liver and everything is quitting on you, and everything is shutting down. And I knew guys like me didn't live to be 74, but I thought 30 was a little short. Maybe 41 or 37 or something, but 30 didn't seem like enough. So I came back, and I told Inga, we just got married. We'd been married like 2 or 3 months. And I said, if you take a drink, I'm leaving. And today I knew why I told her that, because if she took a drink, I knew I would. And so I quit drinking on my own for quite a few years. Some people say six, some people say eight, so I say seven. I'm not sure. But I quit, find a few on it. I got a good job at the Sahara. During this period of time, I was an employee of the month. Because I hear people say when they quit drinking that their whole life they can't stand the way they feel. And I'm glad they wrote this thing called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the second story in there is the one that is what got my attention. But the guy who got in the morning, he's a little jittery. And he's seen that alcohol was a problem in his life. He didn't know he's an alcoholic, but he knew alcohol was a problem. And I knew alcohol was a problem. I'd known that for 10 years, that you don't go to jail and do all the things I do sober. You know what I mean? And there's a lady telling me that the other day you come up and said, I've never been to jail sober. And she said she had. She said, heard me say that. But I've been to jail a lot drunk, you know. When I read that story where he was sober for 25 years, and not only was he successful, but it says he was happy. And on page 22 of the big book, it talks about people, these people who are alcoholics, they react much like other people. And let them drink for a day and they're a monster. And that's what one time one of my neighbors said to Inga, why do you stay with him? And Inga said to her, you don't understand. When Billy's sober, there's nobody more loving, more caring and everything. And let him drink for a day and he's a monster. You know, I don't know what your drink of choice is, but mine's more. You know, once I take a drink, I'm going to guarantee. I heard a speaker say he don't know what's going to happen. I know exactly what's going to happen when I take a drink. I'm going to have another drink, you know, and another one. And then, you know, they go home and I stay, you know. And And I read that story, and he took a drink. In less than 2 months, he was hospitalized. In less than 4 years, he was dead. But my favorite story is Fred on page 41, right? Right? Not a cloud on the horizon. This guy feels super. And he decided to take a drink, and he meets a friendly cab driver in New York. And Jim and all three of them have two things in common. And one of them is all three of them failed to enlarge on their spiritual life. And all three of them, once they started drinking, could not stop. Jim wound up back in the asylum. Guy wound up dead. Fred wound up back in the hospital. And I was sober at quite a while, at 6-7 years, and I went out and I'm playing golf in a tournament. And I'm not a Tiger Woods, but I was crushing that golf ball. And I knew I was going to win that tournament. I was in third place, and I was playing with Mickey's two brothers, the Mantle Boys, and another guy. And one of them offered me a beer, and I took it, and I didn't win the tournament, and I didn't get drunk that day, and I didn't fall down, and I didn't wind up with another woman, and nothing happened, and I went home and told Inga, I said, I just had a beer at the golf course, and a couple beers at the golf course, and she started screaming, oh my God, don't you remember what the doctor told you? And I'm thinking, I should have got a second opinion, you know what I mean? I overshot the mark here, and I said, I don't even want another one, Inga, for Christ's sake, what do you, chill out. You know, my neighbor says, I hear you had a beer at the golf course. Why don't you come on over? I said, be right over. Because I'm not a hard drinker, because I'm an alcoholic. In less than 2 weeks, I was a falling down drunk. Now I know I'm in trouble, so I just quit for all that time, so let's just quit. And here's my story. I can stop drinking. My problem is I always start again. Without some kind of spiritual light, I will always pick up another drink. It's not if I pick up a drink, I will pick up another drink. And 14 months later, I started thinking about something I never dreamed I'd ever dreamed of. I started thinking about suicide on a daily basis. And, you know, I'm not a bad person. You know, I'm an alcoholic and I do bad things when I drink. And I'd go out in my front yard and I start thinking on a daily basis about taking my own life. I didn't want to do it in the house because I didn't want my daughter to see me with my brains knocked out, and I didn't want my wife have to clean up after me. And I just... And one morning, I got this stupid thought. When I was sober 32 years, a guy who came to my home group and gave the very same story that I'm telling you right now. And I never heard that until I was 32 years sober. The one morning, I made up my mind, this is it. And for the first time in my life, for a guy that's always been so angry and so pissed off at everybody, I wasn't even mad no more. What I was just tired. Absolutely wore out, just tired of getting up every morning and trying to be something that I couldn't be. I used to look in the mirror and I'd tell myself, you know, this is what I really thought had happened to me. I thought I became a bad person, and that bothered me. I looked in the mirror and I'd tell myself, this is not what your mother raised. This is not it. And the morning that I went out, I made up my mind. I said, and I've heard guys say, well, I goofed it. I'm a hunter. I got stuff that'll cut you in two. There ain't no problem there. I know how to do it. And I got this stupid thought, and this is the thought I had. And there's something like this. Your mom's going to think she did something wrong. This is really going to hurt your mom. I didn't think about my brothers or my dad or nothing, but I said, this is my little third-year-old mom. You know, I used to rob her because she ain't going to call the cops, you know what I mean? And the other three boys would pay rent, and I'd borrow it back. You know, I'd borrow what she paid down, you know. And I got this stupid thought, and in less than 2 weeks, I would be a member of a thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and this loving God in my life that I know that's got a huge right around me knew that I would never, ever call Alcoholics Anonymous. And this pretty lady I'm telling you about, 1975, what she did was, she was a good-looking German. I mean, good-looking Yeti. And Lenny met her, and she sort of shut the bedroom door on me. And boy, that got my attention. And so she told me, she said, take me to this dance. So I'm thinking, take her to this dance, take a shower, put a little smell of stuff on, dance with her a couple times. Maybe I can have a few seconds of fun after this dance. That's what I'm thinking. So in 1975, I went to the, and what she did was she took my fat butt to an AA meeting. There was a dance, but it was the next night. There was no dance that night. It was an AA meeting. It was a 1975 roundup of Alcoholics Anonymous and the thing. And I went all weekend, and I'm here to tell you that AA worked. I liked AA right away because she opened the bedroom door, so I thought AA's a pretty good thing. Well, you can stay here any way you want to. You know, I don't think it makes any difference how God gets you here. You can fall through the roof. But if you're new and you're an alcoholic, you have no idea how lucky you are that you're sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because you have a thing here that gives you a death sentence. I guarantee you, you know. And my people, and there's a friend of mine that always says this, every time he talks, he says, I hope if you're new that you get in touch with the seriousness of this disease. I hope you do. And what happened was a couple days later, I came home from work and I walked in the house, and I know this is this loving father that watches over me. I walked in and I told him, as soon as you fix supper, I'm going to go to an AA meeting. I never seen a fixed supper that fast in my life. Here, eat. And I showed up with your people at the old Lana Club. It was a street club, and they asked for people who had a drink less than 30 days, and I raised my hand and said, my name is Bill. And they looked, because you're supposed to say something else, you know, and I ain't about to, you know. And I went every day, and I hear people say when they came in here and they felt at home and all that, and if you're new here, I didn't feel at home. But this is what, it didn't take me long that this is what I felt. When I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I sat down in the seat for the 1 hour, this is what I felt. I felt safe. I knew nothing was going to happen to me. I found out real quick, if you don't make no noise or nothing, they can't throw you out of AA. That's the only place in the world they can't throw you out of. They can't ask you to leave if you don't do nothing. You're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous just sitting in a chair. And so what I did was I went to a lot of meetings. On my days off, I just stayed at the Alana Club because I didn't want to drink. And they said, get a sponsor. And one guy says, you need to work the steps. And I said, come outside and I'll knock you off of these, buddy. You know what I'm I went from suicide to homicide in about a week. I didn't want to hurt me. I want to kill every sucker I seen. You know, I was locked in the pissed off position. And I couldn't find a key. Why don't you do this? And why don't you come up on this? You know what? So what I did was I got a good meeting habit. And the other thing that I did was I buddied up. I found a guy that liked to fish like I did, Catfish John. And if you're new here, don't go fishing overnight with an old timer. Bad deal. Just don't do it. I'm just telling you ahead of time, it's one of the most miserable days you'll ever have. You know? He said, let's go fishing. We'll go catfishing. I said, good. And you know what they want to do? They want to talk AA all night long. You know what I'm saying? After about an hour, I want to use him for an anchor. You know what I'm saying? Turn up and drop him over the side, you know. And you could care less because he only had one thing in mind, trying to help Billy Smith. That's what he was trying to do. And what he did was he had me over his house and fix this and fix that. And one day he said, you coming over this weekend? I said, no, I can't. Inga wants me to do some painting. And he was a professional painter, house painter. That's what he did for a living. He said, good, I'll come over and help you. I said, no, that's okay, John. I'll do it myself. And he screamed at me. He said, don't you feel good when you help me? And I said, yeah. He said, then why don't you give me a chance to feel good? I'm sober 34 years. I still have problems asking, letting people come in to help me. I really do. And it's one of the most unselfish things you can do is not let people help you so they can feel good. Isn't that weird? I keep cigarettes in my truck for the homeless and all that, and I'm always doing things for people. And then when they come up to me, like, especially in the last 2 months when I was up in Oregon, I wound up in the emergency room, and Mike and all them guys, it was amazing what they did. I know that I was supposed to be there that weekend, because if I'd been home, I knew I'd have never called the doctor. I was just thinking it was going to go away. And thank God there was a nurse there, and she took my heart rate, and it was 140, and so they got another guy to speak for me on Saturday night, and I wound up speaking on Sunday morning. I don't know if that's smart or not, but I'm not that bright anyway, and I don't worry about it. So, but I just started showing up, and I wasn't doing this thing, and so if you don't do nothing here, you don't get nothing. I believe you can stay sober here for a little while, not do anything, but I don't believe you can stay here forever. There's a process that has to be taken place to open up this thing inside where God can come in. And as long as I keep this thing up here going, it's not going to work. And so I came out of the Triangle Club one day, and I knew I was going to get drunk, and I knew I wasn't going to get home. And right behind me, this guy was standing there, and his name was Ted Davis. And I said, I hear you have a lot of luck with people like me. Will you please be my sponsor? And I hate rejection. I still do. And before he could say anything, I said the most stupidest thing I've ever said in my life. I said, I'll do anything you tell me. Let me tell you something. The gift of desperation is probably the best gift we get. I don't know about you, but I got to be pushed up against the wall and hit about 4 times before I asked for help. And I was pushed up against the wall. And he said, okay, be over at my house this afternoon at 1:30. I said, Jesus, I didn't mean today. And he said, Billy, I said, I'll be there. And that's what I did for the next 26 years with this guy. Whatever he told me to do, I'll do. And I remember one time I told him, I said, I need to work the fourth step. He said, listen, this is what I want you to do right now. I want you to go all day long and not try to hurt nobody else or yourself. Pick him up because he don't have a car, and take him over there. And you go pick this guy up tonight because he don't have a car. You just pick him up. And then he told me, I want you to go on the 12-step list. And I said, what's that? He said, well, you pick up people and you bring them to work and you bring them to the meetings. I said, Ted, I'm not a real alcoholic, not what the book talks about. He said, good, tell them that. They'll like that. I said, Ted, you don't understand. I am so angry. I'm going to tear people's face off for Christ's sake. He said, tell them that. Then he said the nicest thing to me, and until this day, I still try to do that. He said, just be the best Billy Smith you can, and they'll see right through you. He said, just don't try to be a phony. Just try to that. And don't try to tell them, give them what you got, because we don't want them to have that right now. Just bring them to us and turn them over. So that's what I did. I'd pick you jerks up, right? And you never picked a drunk. If you ever picked drunks up, you know what they do? All they want to do is talk. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know I can't quit drinking. No. I've been trying to quit drinking. And then they go that stupid stuff. Yeah, and I know I'm alcoholic. And after I listed about 100 of them guys, I finally figured out if you're a duck and sound like a duck and quack like a duck, you're probably a duck because they all sound like me. You know, and by picking you guys up, you told me what I was, right? And I still just, it went to my head, not to my heart. But in my head, I knew that I was probably an alcoholic. So I did a four-step. I was sober a few years, not too long, but I didn't do it my first or second year. And I did a four-step, and I went to write the four-step, and I couldn't get it on paper. And he told me to go to a retreat, and I met a priest from California that is no longer with us, and I just love more than anything. And his name is Father Don Lynch, and in 3 days, he made a difference in my life, just in 3 days. And me and Lenny was talking to him one day, and he said, you was raised in the South where you get up in the morning, you're wrong, huh, buddy? I said, that's right. I said, you know, there's two places you go, and I know where I'm going. You know, you don't go up there and do all the things I did. And he said, what if I told you that God put you here to love you so you could love another human being? I said, boy, I like that. He said, Billy, look at Alcoholics Anonymous. People like you walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, you told me that you wouldn't even allow it on your brother's property, or nobody's property or anything. And you walk into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we come up to you and put our arm around you, and we say, Billy, we're glad you are here. And the difference is, we mean it. And it seems like the sicker you are when people like you come in, the more we love you. Isn't that weird? He said, that's no place else in the world but Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, what kind of... And the whole weekend like that, and I came off that thing, and I picked up that four-step, and the pencil just flew across the paper, and I was able to write it down. And because he said, you need to tell some, ask your God to forgive you, and then get somebody and let them know exactly what kind of person Billy is. And I was And my sponsor made some weird faces when I was going through my fifth step, you know, because I'm going to, especially when I got in my sex inventory and all that, I was homeless, so I did things that most people don't do. And, you know, I do anything to survive, you know. And when I got all done, he said, I want you to go out to the park. And I was having trouble with my marriage, go out to the park and think about what we did. And I went out in the park and I thought about it, and I didn't get even with my dad, and that bothered me. I got even with my mom. I was 17 years sober when my mom went the other side, but I didn't give him my dad. But I got this feeling that just maybe I can do this. And I just started doing up and wound up sponsoring people. And, you know, when I was 10 years sober, I got a divorce again. And we got divorced at 5, and I went back and over my sponsor's house. My ex was locked up in a mental institution. And I'm telling my sponsor I'm going to get remarried. My sponsor's wife looked at me and she said, you know, honey, they got the wrong one locked up. They should turn her loose and lock you up. You're the nut. Once the alcoholic makes up his mind, you can't change it. And we got remarried 3 or 4 days after I married. I knew I'd made a mistake. 5 years later, I got another divorce. And this time when I got the divorce, there was no money left because she started playing 22. What happens is we step on people's toes and they retaliate, and she knew if she blew all the money, it would really bother me. And so I mistreated her, and so she got even. And when I did my fourth step, I got to see that I'm the reason that she did all that stuff. And I went by the house one day, and it just would really look like crap. And I went, yes. But I got a big mouth, and I went over and told my sponsor, you won't believe how bad that house looks and all this and the yard and all that stuff. He says, how bad is it? I said, boy, it's really bad. He says, okay, here's the deal. You go over, knock on the door and ask if you can mow the yard and fix the house and fix it up and everything. And he said, listen to me. Don't you dare ask her for one dime. You take it out of your own pocket and you fix it up. I said, Ted, I give her everything. The home, and I heard a lady speaker say that these guys always talking about giving us the house. They forget to tell you that they also give us the mortgage. Well, for the lady that said that, this house was free and clear. And everything else that she got was free and clear. And I wound up with zero. I got a little bitty piece of property way out that we hadn't seen. And she got everything else. And I went over and he said, you go over and knock on the door and ask her if you can please come up and fix that house. And I went over and knocked on her door and it wasn't long after that that I told her. The feelings dropped down and we was no longer mad at each other. And I told her, I said, listen, as long as I'm alive, I'll make sure that nothing never happens to you. I promise you that. So for 20-some years, I mowed the yard, took care of the pool, did everything. And I know today I'm standing in front of you because of a beautiful lady called Inger Weber. I would not be here without her, because I know today that I would have never, ever called Alcoholics Anonymous. God put the one person in my life that said she was taking this drunk to an AA meeting. In January the 27th, I lost her. And I moved back in with her because she got really sick. And when I moved back in, she was just, if you've ever done it, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you don't have a clue. I really had to clean her when she go to the bathroom. I had to do everything, and I never did that in my life, and I've never had a job that hard in my life. And I could lay it in bed beside her, and I couldn't sleep because every time she'd move, I'd just wake right up. So my daughter come over to give me a break, and she came over, and this pretty little girl of mine, as a lot of people ask me, and if you've heard me before, you know, Debbie, I'm here to tell you that she has a sobriety date, and it's February the 20th. She has a sponsor. She's going to meetings and every day. And so she's got 48 days. Thank you. So for all you people around the world that don't think prayer works, I have several people. Now, Marty come up and tell me the only reason she's sober was because of his prayers. He's speaking Saturday night. So that tells you how powerful the Saturday night speaker is. So you got to show up and hear him, you know, because he can heal people, you know. I haven't quite got there yet. I've been trying, but in fact, I haven't even come close, you know. So Debbie gave me a right break, and she went into tremors. And every time my daughter's gotten in serious trouble, she never ever called once her druggy friends or one of her friends. Every time she got in serious trouble, she calls members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Isn't that weird? And so when her mother went into tremors, she called this lady named Donna Robertson that I sponsor. And Donna says, call 911, and I know exactly where your dad is, and I'll get a hold of him. And she called me, and I was there before the ambulance left, and we got her in the hospital, and I told her I would be there to the end. And on January the 27th, I got diabetes and some more problems, so I ran down to get a bite to eat, and I come up, and I was over there, just me and her, and I watched her take her last breath. And I thought, you know, I didn't really realize when I told her I would be there to the end, that God would make it available for me to be there to the end. And I told Donna, I said, you know something, I feel like I'm even. I felt like I'd done everything I told her. And some more people said, we don't like the way you keep score, because we feel like you're way ahead. And I said, I don't want to ever feel like ahead. I want to always feel like I'm coming from behind, because it drives me to be a better person. If I ever get up on the pedestal, it would be really bad for a guy like Billy Smith. And it was right after that that my daughter and her boyfriend got into a beef, real bad beef, and they called the cops, and the protective people came out and told her they was going to take my grandson. He's 2 years old, and Debbie started screaming, you can't take him. He will not make it in Child Haven. And I said, we're not leaving him here. We've had some real bad luck with little kids in the last 6 months in Vegas. We've lost three or four of them, less than 4 years old. And the protected people are not taking any kind of chances. And he blew over two, which is three times the limit. And then she blew something. And there was some cops there that got Debbie away from all of them. And they kept her over here for like an hour and a half or 2 hours, she told me. And then they said, come and blow. And she blew less than eight. And so they let her stay there and keep the son. And the very next day, she called Alcoholics Anonymous because she didn't want to lose that kid. And she called a girl that I sponsor, this Donna. She said, will you please be my sponsor? And Donna says, I can't do that because your father's my sponsor. So she called me, and I told Donna, I said, okay, that sounds good. I like that. Let me tell you how I wound up sponsoring women. When I was new sober, I went to my home group one night, and we had a lady in Las Vegas named, and she's in the big meeting in the sky, so I'll use her name, Merlin. And she was a gorgeous lady, and she was a street worker, and she'd go in and out of AA. And in the last few years of her life, the life that she lived had beat her up bad. She still looked good, but not like the beautiful lady I'd seen. And she was in the meeting one night, and I'm new sober, really reading the book and know everything about everything. And if you want to know something about Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm the man you want to come and see. Don't do it now, but you could then. And she was taking a one-year cake, and she said, I want to thank my sponsor, Ken Sixbury, for being my sponsor and helping me get on. And she'd never got a year cake, and it wasn't a dry eye in the room, you know. And after the meeting, I went over, and Ken Sixbury's about 6'4". He's got a hand about that wide, and he's a nasty son of a gun. He's still alive and mean, and he's still nasty. You know, he's never, and he's helped a ton of people. And I went and told him that men sponsor men and women sponsor women. And he reached out and grabbed me, and he says, you ought to go read your book, you little jerk. I said, my book says, we are men and women. Yes, Ken. He said, if you want to make love to them, don't sponsor them. But if you might want to help save their life, why don't you go help them? And so when Donna asked me to sponsor, I told her, I said, she's a biker lady. And he's a biker. And I said, you got to have your husband call me. And if he does, so Kim called, and he says, this is Kim. And Donna says, you won't sponsor unless I call. And I said, that's right. And he said, Billy, I'm thrilled to death that she asked you to sponsor. I'm glad she asked you. And I said, when I come over, he says, I know, get my fat butt up and get out. He said, I don't have a problem. And isn't it weird? When she called Donna, and said, Donna said, I can't do that. And I told Donna, I said, why do you think she called you? Why do you think Debbie called you? She said, well, I said, don't you understand? Debbie trusts you. If you're new here, you know what look back when you came into Alcoholics Anonymous, how many people did you trust? I know this is how many I trusted. You know what I mean? I didn't have an idea what it was to trust somebody. And I said, she called me, so why don't you just be her friend? And so she said, okay, I can do that. And 2 weeks later, she called me and says, I'm her sponsor. And, 3 weeks later, I had some things going on, and I'm telling Debbie about all this crap that's going on. And Debbie looked at me. She's 3 weeks sober. She said, you need to call your sponsor. I said, Debbie, chill out. Not yet, Deb, you know. And now she goes around and tells everybody, my grand sponsor is my father. And she told me this stupid joke. And it's an AA joke, so I'm going to tell you. Guy goes fishing. He's got a fishing pole and a hook and no bait. And he gets over to the lake, and here comes a snake swimming by with a frog in his mouth. So the guy reaches down, grabs the snake, takes the frog out of his mouth, reaches back and grabs his Jack Daniel bottles, sticks it down the snake's throat, gives him a couple big slugs, turns the old snake loose, puts the frog on, starts fishing. A couple minutes later, he feels a tug on his leg. He looks down, there's the snake. He's got two frogs. So what's happened in the last 6 months of my life has just been absolutely unreal. But I have been able to really, really pull into this thing. And I've had so many, the way I see things now, right? When Donna come and asked me to sponsor, right? What I'm trying to do is help her, right? Let me see. She was working as a waitress at a hotel, and she had 11 points against her. And there, in a lot of the hotels, they have a point system. And if you get 12 points, you're lost. They fire you, and you can't get the job back. And what happened was I wound up being a boss at Caesars, a pit boss. And when we get 10, 11 points on the guy, we do everything we could to get the other 2 points and get somebody else in there that wants to do the job. And so I told her, I said, listen to me real close. They are after you. If you sneeze, they'll have to give you another point. So you go in early and you do everything they ask you to do. And she worked as a waitress, and one day she called me. She says, they want me to be a hostess tonight. I said, so? She said, Billy, they only pay $65. I'll make $150 if I work. I said, listen to me real close. You go tell them it'd be an honor to be a hostess, and you be the best hostess they've ever had. And you thank them at the end of the night that they let you be a hostess. And she said, well, gee, I said, just go do it. And 3 years later, she was Employee of the Month, right? Same girl, just to some principles and stuff, and then she still works there and still doing the job, you know. And I've had all kinds of things happen. You know, let me tell you this story that I've told a million times, but if you're new here, it ain't people like me that have all the knowledge and all that kind of stuff. I've just had a lot of experience. I was in Montana a few years ago at a conference, and a guy says, you've got a lot of stories. I said, yeah, I do. That's because I do a lot. I still go to 7, 8, 9 meetings a week. I still go to the prisons every month. I do we have a Skid Row detox. Lenny has seen it. We have, where you can go in there with no money and stay 7 days. They sit underneath a tree to get in. And what I do is I go down to the Indian reservation to get these cheap cigarettes and keep them in my vehicle. And I go over, and in the summertime, we get them Gatorade, and a lot of times they're hungry. We just go get them a cheeseburger. What I try to do is just try to be a friend. I don't go preach AA to them and everything. I give them my card, and I say, if you ever want help, give me a call. And every now and then, one of them's called. You know, and so I don't really try to get into all that kind of stuff, but I got a lot of stories because I do a lot, you know. And I lost my thought. And I do that because I'm old. Anybody know where I was at? Huh? Oh, yeah, I was in Montana. I done got out of there. Anyway, oh, I know I was going to tell you this story. And that's right, I was going to tell a story. And so this is what it is. It ain't that people like Marty and I and Lenny and all of us that we're that sharp, but we've got the experience. You know, I've been through divorces, deaths of my brothers. I remember when my brother died, my sponsor said, why don't you come and live with us 2 or 3 days and just move in, because, and I did. I went over there, and he said something that I still remember. He said, you can't speed up grief. It's just got to run its course. And this thing with Inga, it's just running its course. I'm not over it. I don't know how long the course is, but just got to run its course. And so when a few years ago, this good friend of mine that Lenny knows, Stan, sent me a Christmas card. And it describes Alcoholics Anonymous better than I'd ever seen. On this Christmas card, it talks about a man being in a hole. And in my case, from 15 to 40, I've been in a hole for 25 years. And a doctor comes by, and he yells up to the guy and says, listen, I've been in this hole for 25 years. Can you please help me? And the doctor writes some scriptures on a piece of paper and drops them down in the hole and leaves. And pretty soon the priest comes by and he yells up to the priest and says, could you please help me? And the priest writes some scriptures and prayers on a piece of paper and drops them down the hole and leaves. Pretty soon my sponsor comes skipping along and I yell up to my sponsor. I said, listen, I've been in this hole for 25 years. Can you please help me? And my stupid sponsor jumps down in the hole. Right? And I said, boy, you're the dumbest guy I've ever met. Now we're both stuck in this hole. My sponsor says, no, we're not. I've been in this hole before, and I know the way out. And that's what it's all about. It's just taking the guys through the book, and every time I take them through the book and show them the thing, it's amazing how the things that I see. The one time I said to him, when did they put that in there? And he said, 1939, you know. Yeah, right, you know. And I don't know how many times I'd read it, and, you know, and I finally see it. I don't know how many times I hear it, but I finally hear it. I don't know about you, but it just takes a while, you know. And doing all this stuff that's been going on with anger in my heart and all this kind of stuff, I left my house one day. I wasn't even gone no time. And I came back, and I had 13 messages on my machine. I said, it's impossible to call 13 times and know the time I'm gone. And people just wondering how I was. Are you okay? Is there anything we can do for you? And the thing about it is they really care. You know, and I don't watch the news on TV because I just don't. I watch the cartoon channel. I can tell you when everything comes on, Tom and Jerry. If you got any kids, they will know when Wacky Races or anything comes on. I'll be glad to tell them. And I watch the animal channel. I watch it all the time. And every time I watch something, I try to tie things in with AA. And one time I'm watching, and it was these wild African dogs, right? And if you ever watch them, they are vicious suckers. But you know, if you ever watch a herd of zebras or buffalo, and they never run into the middle of the herd and get nothing. It's always the ones on the outside, you know what I mean? The ones that's not going to meetings, you know what I'm saying? The ones that don't want to help you. It's the ones, they never get into the herd. And the more active you get in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more that you do in Alcoholics Anonymous, the bigger your herd gets. And you know, I got so many people around me. And I'm watching it one day, and I seen this thing, and it just blew me away. It was an hour program, and it was about a little elephant, and it was born, and it didn't have the elbows that the rest of the elephants, so it couldn't walk. And elephants are not like the rest of the animals. All the rest of the animals, if they have a newborn and it's not, can't take care of itself, it's just feed for the others. But elephants ain't like that. They stick together. And what Mama did, she went and got all of her sisters, and every time the little guy would go lay down, they'd wrap a trunk around him and pick him up and make him come along. And when one of them would lay him down, he'd go lay down again to die and come out and wrap a trunk around him and pick him up. And pretty soon he started walking along. And during the last 6 months, I've had so many people put their trunk around me. It's just amazing all the things that happen. And at the end of the show, the little guy's running along with the rest of them because, you know, and I still think elephants are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not sure, but I think they are, you know. And what happened is, during all this kind of things, I've got, you know, what happens is these guys that I sponsor, they call me up and said, let's go have lunch, and we're going over here, this restaurant need, and we're going over here, and they just right there all the time, you know. And I got to remember, I had a friend of mine that just had prostate cancer and all that and everything, you know, and I just make sure that I called him every day and just let him know that I loved him, you know, and I don't know. I never ever pictured myself being loved the way I am. I just get overwhelmed with it. If you really knew who I was and how I thought, you wouldn't get that close to me. But I act different today. I still think weird. You know what I'm saying? I think at you. I just don't say nothing, you know. But I still think at you, you know. And if I get to the other side and God goes, you know, If he judges me on how I think, I've had it. But if he judges me on how I treat his kids, I might be okay. I got a thing, I don't know, I haven't told this in years. I got a thing that goes in my casket. I'm down to not to be cremated because my mother didn't want me to be, so I couldn't care one way or the other, but she didn't want me to. But it's a picture of a goofy bear. He's got a hat on and a fishing pole. He's got all these little toys around him. You can tell he's a nut. And got a little fish on his thing. He's caught a fish about this big. And this is what it says. It says, may I fish to my dying day. And on my last cast, when I land in my master's net, let me be judge big enough to keep. Not a trophy, just big enough to keep. Let me be a five when I get to the other side. Let me say somebody I'm really proud of. And I felt like that. And because I knew I was born and raised Christian, and so I knew when I died I was going to hell. I don't feel that way no more. I don't know where I'll go, but I feel like I got a chance because most of the time my actions are treated a lot better than my words. You know, you can talk all this stuff you want up here, but my buddy Pillhead John, he says, this is what I love in Wino Pillhead. He said, if you don't have a program in your own home, you don't have one. You know what I'm saying? And I was thinking about all the things that I've done all over the years because I've always been a really, really active member of AA, and I still am. And I was thought, what if I'd have really been a jerk, right? Then my daughter, when it come time to pick up the phone and call Alcoholics Anonymous, it would not happen. So the one thing I love more than anything in the world because of all the things I've done in the year, called when she got in trouble, she called because she knows this thing is working. Isn't that weird? That one time I looked at her one time, this is a few years ago, and I said, she's in my truck and she just looked horrible. And I said, how do you see your father? And she says, you have the best life I've ever seen. I said, Debbie, one thing we've never done, we've never bullcrapped each other. She said, Dad, listen, your phone rings all the time. You got more friends than I ever seen. You got two pockets full of money all the time. And I'm not calling that AA. She tied my good life into Alcoholics Anonymous, and yet she won't pick up the phone and call. You know, and I don't know. I just, you know, I've had all kinds of things happen, and I just, even with all the prayers, after I retired in 2000, I took what money I had and invested in some mortgage companies, and they stole it. They still a big lawsuit over it and all that. This is years ago, and it was a big six figures, and I got back $4,000. And they still don't put him in jail. That don't get my money back. And I'm walking around, and I called Debbie in England, and I told him that you guys got to tighten your belt because right now all I got is a Social Security check. And in 1976 or 1977, a guy come over to my house and wanted to borrow some money, and I didn't like him. I wouldn't loan it to him. And he says, I put a piece of property up, and he said, I got to go to prison. And the reason I did it, he had two little girls, Debbie's age, and I told Inga, I don't like him, but I like them two little girls. And he needed the money while he stayed in prison, so I said, okay. And he signed it over, and he says, I said, okay, when you get out, I'll give him $3,000. When you get out, you got a year and a half to give me back $3,300. You're not my friend, so this is a business thing. He come back 8 years later, say he won the property. I was getting a divorce for the second time, and I told him no. I said, that's all I'm getting. She's getting everything else. And he said, okay, and he left. So I'm standing in my front yard, and I'm thinking, you know, after I've lost all that money, and I didn't know if I was going to have to go back to work or not. I didn't really want to do that, and so I started thinking. I called Stan. I said, I got this piece of property. I need to sell it. And he said, where's it at? And I said, I don't know. He said, well, you had to see it. Somehow. I said, I've never seen it. I don't have a clue. I said, you're the real estate agent. Here's the number. You find it. And so we went out, and there it was. And on this side was $1 million house, and over here was one bigger than that. And over here, I thought, wow. And we drove by a sign that said, 200 some thousand for a half an acre. I said, you're like kidding me, right? And so we wound up selling it for big six figures. And I really believe, this is the way I believe, you can believe any way you want to. And maybe you think I'm an egotistical maniac, and you can think that too. But I believe in 1977, my loving God said, this guy's going to be in trouble. So he, you know, he sent Mike to my house. And he sent people like you, and I kept doing what I'm doing, and my daughter shows up to people like you. And you know, it's just every now and then I get really tired. I was down there Wednesday night, and two more guys asked me to sponsor them, and I said, now you send them to two at a time, you know. And I just go give them my number. I said, you know, I'll be back in town Sunday night. Call me Monday, and we'll get this thing started. One guy had been in prison. We go up to prisons all the time. And so what I've been doing is... Lenny calls me two or three times a week, and I got a guy back in Kansas that I call. And every time Debbie would get in trouble, I would never call people that I'd always call Lenny, and I'd call BJ. Both of them have lost children. And and she'd be on the street. And I said, you know, and I'd always help her. And a lot of people said, as long as you keep helping her, she's never going to straighten out. And I called BJ and I said, they say that I'm doing the wrong thing, keeping her alive. And he'd always tell me the same thing. I'd give anything if Brian was here and I could buy him a cheeseburger. I said, I got you, buddy. And I'd hang it up and I'd go do it. And one time she's over at my house and she looked horrible. And I used to live on the streets. And if I had $40 in my pocket, you ask me how I'm doing, I'd tell you it's not that bad, right? And she come over to my house. She looked like she weighed about 80, 85 pounds. And she's all drawn in. And I said, Jesus, you don't look good. And she says, can I come in and take a shower? And I said, yeah, but you can't live here. And she says, I know that. And I said, when's the last time you eat? And she said, I don't remember. And so I watched her eat three or four times, and she was there 3 or 4 hours. And finally I told her she had to go. And I said, I've never seen you look that bad. And she says, Dad, I'm living in the back of a pickup, and we got a mattress in there now, and it's not that bad. And I thought, that's right. Got a mattress. And she said, no, I don't have to sleep on it. I'm thinking if you don't drink and drug, you could come in here and live here in this beautiful home. The alcoholic name is so narrow that you just can't see, you know. And then when she showed up to you people because of that little guy. So there's always like a crisis comes in, you know. And I tell people that I was a bad father. When Debbie was real young, I don't ever remember coming in the house and Debbie running up and grabbed me. I don't ever remember that. But I've had people tell me, and including Debbie, tell me that I was not a bad father. But I paid the bills and stuff, and I thought that made me a father, right? But I was never there emotionally for anybody. And, you know, when I walk into her apartment now, and that little guy, he's 26 months old, when he sees me, he comes flying, and I have to catch him, you know. And I told Debbie, I said, every time he comes in, I come in, he just lights up. She says, you ought to see your face. It's a lot more alive. I said, I never thought of that. She says, oh, Dad, you ought to see. You think he lights up. You should see your face, you know. And so I got another chance to be a day thing. And if you're new here, I hope you buddy up. Find somebody. Debbie was 2 weeks sober, and she told me I got to go pick up 2 newcomers, and I thought that'll work. And there's a little girl around there that's been around in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous forever, and they've hooked up. Dana and hers hooked up, and they both sober. And both of them are just going and bouncing off the wall and everything, but they got two. And then the guy that's the father, my grandson, he's hooked up. He's got a sponsor and everything. And because of people like you and what it does is Alcoholics Anonymous, if you put this process in your life, heals the family. It just heals it. When I was 10 years sober, my brothers wouldn't have anything to do with me. When I was 10 years sober, Bobby looked at me and said, we never told you how proud we are of you. And I said, Jesus, it took you 10 years to tell me that? And he said, Billy, that's the thing you do. And for my 34th birthday, I got a huge picture that this guy does the pictures in Las Vegas blew up. And there's my brother and his wife right in the middle of all these AAs. There's my brother. On my 30th birthday, he showed up and he showed up in town. He's got a bad heart and he's got leukemia. And I said, what are you going to do? And my sponsor said I had to go speak on my 30th birthday. And he said, well, we're going to the frontier and we're going to line dance. I said, listen, the meeting's over at 8 o'clock, 8:15. I won't even shake hands. 8:15, I'll be there and we'll line dance. And I showed up and Angie Deal and a whole bunch of people came in from California. It was a lot of people coming for my 30th birthday. And I walked in and there was my brother and his wife. First time I'd ever been to an AA meeting in the world. And when I got done, my brother come up and says, we knew you was loved. We had no idea that you were loved like that. And because it's through Alcoholics Anonymous and people like you, you let my family know that everything's going to be okay. When my mother was, I was 17 years sober. When my mother went to the other side, she knew she was leaving and we knew she was leaving. And all the boys were there and she says, I'm really proud of all my boys. And she said, Billy, I am so proud of you. All because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you let my mom go to the other side in peace. And, you know, I was prejudiced, and I knew I was, and it bothered me. And I'd go to them detoxes, and when I first went down there, it'd be 60-70% white and 30%. And now it's like right the opposite. And And I tell myself, you got to change your thinking or you can't keep coming down here. You can't help those guys if you think like that. So I ask this loving God to please help me change, put the people in my life to things. And I just get on my knees. And anytime I want to do something, I just ask God to keep going. And a few years ago, I always tell them, guys, when you leave here, you need to call somebody. Because if you go back to your homies, you got no shot. Call somebody as soon as you leave here, and we'll get you a meeting and hook you up. And I go home, and my phone rings, and this guy calls, and he says, you said call before you leave, so I'm calling. I said, what's your name? He said, Jerome Jackson. I said, what do you look like? He says, I'm black. I said, I can tell that on the phone, Jerome. I said, listen, just come out front, stand out front, and I'll come and pick you up. And I pulled up, and there he was, a little pencil mustache, 44 years old, and got in my truck, and I said, what do you do for a living? He says, I'm from the hood. I said, listen to me real close. The only hood I know about is the one on my truck. I don't know nothing about no hood. He says, drugs and girls. I said, okay, how many times you been in prison? He said, three. I said, okay, it's adding up. I said, we'll start with day labor. He said, I don't do day labor. I said, good, get out of the truck. He said, man, what are you about? I said, listen, with God's help, maybe we can fill up that big hole you got in your gut. Maybe you can help me fill up this big hole I got in my gut. He said, what is that about? I said, later on I'll tell you, not now. I said, day labor. He says, okay. That was over 12 years ago. He got a job at a hotel cleaning the bathrooms. He called me up one day and he was really mad. He said, you know, I'm a pretty smart kid and I'm in your cleaning urinals and everything. I said, what do you want me to do? Come over and give you a hug? You know. I said, be the best bathroom cleaner you got. And I said, listen, right now, these hotels, because I was the boss at Caesars, I said, right now, these hotels need minorities in different positions. Just be a good employee, and they'll start looking at you. Let me tell you what he does 12 years later. He's the shift boss. He runs everything. It's the same guy, just Alcoholics Anonymous. And another guy I sponsored, he'd been arrested 88 times. And he had a little carpet company, but he couldn't do commercial stuff because he didn't have a license. And I said to him, you need to get a license. He said, Billy, I'm arrested 88 times. I've been in prison three. I said, good. Get a thing, fill it out, and put every one of them down. In your case, since you're arrested 88 times, right at the bottom, I probably did some more, and I don't know if you find them. I did them too. I said, just fill it out and turn it in. So he did, and we went over the day he was going to get licensed, and the first guy that got up was a guy from the Orient, and it said, on one of the questions was, have you ever been arrested for drunken driving? And he put down no. And they said, sir, you was arrested in 1971. You was arrested in 1975. He said, not in the last 10 years. They said, it doesn't say that. He said, last 10 years. I make a motion we deny the license, 7-0, no license. Next guy got up was a brother, dressed, looked like he'd come out of Gucci. He got up and went, good morning, Mrs. Crimson, good morning. I said, this guy's so full of crap. You know, says, have you ever been in prison? He put down no. They said, sir, you served time. He said, not in the last 10 years. They said, it doesn't say that, no license. So when my man Thomas got up, you could see him going through these papers. I said, they're looking like this. And the lady sitting beside Thomas stood up and says, everything he's ever done is right here on this paper. He didn't leave nothing out. We checked. And this Mrs. Christian said, that's all we want you to do is tell us the truth. 7-0, he got a license, and he just got another one. All because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for now, it's amazing how people appreciate people like you and I that come from nowhere and turn our lives around. I'm really glad I come. I felt like I've been a little off because of my heart and everything. I haven't been feeling good. And, but I'm really glad I'm here. This is the third time I spoke at this conference. So if you've heard me before, I apologize to you. I love this conference. I love being here. I love being around Lenny and Butch and all these guys. And I'm going to end this thing the way I always do. Before I ended, I never got even with my debt. And when I went over to my sponsor and after when I was doing my fifth step and I told him, I never got even with him, and I'm glad that if I had a sponsor that I could trust, that I could talk to like I talked to any really somebody I could trust that I could tell anything. He never, ever put me down and nothing. One time I was a steering committee rep for a year, and I hated it. I mean, I just flat hated it. And then they voted me in as a GSR, which is worse, you know. And so I was a GSR for like 2 or 3 months, and they was arguing one night over $2 or $3 selling and all them biddies. And I wanted to take $5 and break it in little pieces and put it where the sun don't shine. And I went and told Ted. I said, Ted, listen to me. I can't do that. I said, that's... And I'm waiting for the lecture, right? Yeah, you took a commitment for a year. And he said, that's right. That's right, Billy. You're not a politician. That ain't your thing, man. He said, look, we'll get somebody else to be GSR. You just go back down to Skid Row and go back down and do what you do. And you know what I'm saying? And so I told him about my dad, and I said, and Ted looked at me, and he says, I remember you telling me something. And I said, what was that? He says, I remember you telling me that your father said he would like you even if you wasn't his son. And I said, my dad did tell me that. Because the other three boys didn't like to hunt and fish, and I did. And I was always his partner. My father was crippled. He couldn't pick up 10 pounds off the floor, and I'd always go get this stuff, and my father, and I said, that's right. And so when my father, I went down and seen my father right before he died, and I told him I'm not going to come back down and see you in no box. I'm going to spend all the time I can with you now, but I'm not going to. And my father said to me, I don't blame you. If you're sitting in this room and one of your kinfolk or close families gets sick or passes away, show up. The funeral's not for the dead, the funeral's for the living. Because everybody kept saying, where's Bill? That was his partner, where's Bill? And what I've done is I've been able to take the mistakes that I've made in my life and help the people that... I remember when Stan's mom went into a coma, and he said, she's in a coma and she don't know anything. I said, you better get your butt over there, you know. And he went up and he told her, and I said, don't even think about it, just go. I promise you, it'll be the worst thing in your life if you don't go. And he was holding her hand. He said, Mom, I know you don't know I'm here. And he said to this day, he really thought his mom knew he was there. And he said it just made a difference in his life. So I've took the mistakes that I've made in my life and be able to help people that way. So I always tell this story to end my pitch. This is the story that my father told me. Oh, I know, Lenny, I forgot. Tell the dog story. Yeah, I forgot. I had this old yellow lab. He was field trained. I know everybody feels this way, but he was different. He was really tuned into me. One time I'm picking up some aluminum cans for my daughter because she saved them, and I looked and he come bringing one. You know, whatever I was doing, I couldn't believe it. And he got old and he got heart problems. I took him to the vet and they said he's got heart problems, he got a heart murmur and all that. And I took him out to the desert. We had this one place where he had to go to. There's rabbits and quail and all this stuff out there. And we got out in the desert and the wind was blowing. He got away from me. And I got up on this mountain. I looked out across the desert and there's no dog nowhere. And I panicked. I started crying and I said, God, please, whatever you do. What I thought happened and what I thought he had a heart attack, and I didn't want to leave him in the desert for the coyotes. I wanted to take him home and give him a decent burial. And I'm looking out across the desert and there's no yellow dog nowhere. And it wasn't even a minute. Here come a guy riding a bicycle down the path, right? I thought, God, you're pretty quick, you know. And so I started screaming to the guy, and the guy thought I wanted something. I said, listen, I don't want nothing. I'm just looking for a yellow lab. I got a yellow lab, and I can't. Have you seen one? He says, no, but there's one sitting by a white truck that don't have a tail. I said, hell, that's him. So I go running back, and there he sat by the truck. And I thought, Jesus Christ, that's neat. And so I went and told Craig Clove. I said, can you believe this? I asked God to help me. Guy on the bicycle, sitting by the truck. He said, you got the God thing mixed up. I said, Craig, I'm not making up nothing. Ask God for help. He said, you got the God thing mixed up. I said, okay, what happened, Craig? He said, here's really what happened. He says, buddy's back at the truck going, listen, God, I got this dumb redneck out in the desert. Will you please send him back to the truck? I said, well, maybe that's what happened. Maybe it was buddy's God. Let me shut this thing down. My father told me this story when I was a teenager. He said there's a horse race in this North Carolina where in a small town. And it's like 13 to 15 guys, they race these horses, and whoever wins the race is the king for the year. It's the biggest thing in that little town. And he didn't tell the other boys. I don't know why he told me. Maybe it was because of I was such a loser. And he said all the fathers were in the winning circle except one father. One father was back in the barn. And the guy in the barn that took care of the horses asked the man, says, why aren't you out in the winning circle with all the rest of the fathers? And the man looked at the guy in the barn. He says, listen to me real close. If my son wins this race, no, he won't need me. But if he loses, I want to be here for him. So I'm so glad that you were here for me. So come and join us if you're new. Come and put this process in your life and watch your family come stand in the winning circle. Thank you very, very much.